Welcome to the MacGuffin Man. I'm Alex, and with me, as usual, is James.
Yo.
We've been off for a couple weeks, but just to get you caught up on what we have been talking about the last few weeks. Maybe 2 weeks ago, after Mike Nichols passed away, we reposted our episode The Graduate, which is episode 54. There's a lot of youthful vitality in our voices in that episode. I re-listened to make sure it wasn't embarrassing, but yeah, we just sound young. It's weird. And then before that, we talked about Birdman, Interstellar, and Nightcrawler, Memento before that. Yeah, it's been a good fall here at the MacGuffin, as we've joked. We've been making up for our terrible late summer. I also just shot and edited another video for band Ivory Hours. So follow us on Twitter at the MacGuffin Men, and I'll tweet out a link to that. It's kind of nutty. And I think that's it. James, you got plugs?
Maybe later.
Okay. You'll come up with some things to sell and then plug them.
If I shoot and edit an Ivory Hours video in the next, I don't know, 40 minutes,
I think that's always in play. I think the last one we did, we turned it around pretty quick. Anyway, we'll get to the theme song.
Got any friends, Andy?
No.
Well, why is that?
I don't know. I just never really saw the use.
Oh, well, you can play with otherwise. Lennon and McCartney, they were school buddies, am I right?
Charlie Parker didn't know anybody until Joe Jonas threw a cymbal at his head.
So that's your idea of success, huh?
I think being the greatest musician of the 20th century is anybody's idea of success.
Dying broke and drunk and full of heroin at the age of 34 is not exactly my idea of success.
I'd rather die drunk, broke at 34 and have people at a dinner table talk about me than live to be rich and sober at 90 and nobody remember who I was.
Ah, but your friends will remember you. That's the point.
None of us were friends with Charlie Parker. That's the point.
Travis and Dustin, they have plenty of friends and plenty of purpose.
And I'm sure they'll make great school board presidents someday.
Oh, that's what this is all about? You think you're better than us?
Catch on quicker and model you in?
I got a reply for you, Andrew. You think Carlton football's a joke? Come play with us.
Four words you will never hear from the NFL.
Who wants dessert?
And from Lincoln Center?
All right, James.
Yeah.
Is that like the moment of you having an idea for something to plug?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, cool. Go for it.
No, I'll do it later.
Okay.
What are we talking about today?
We're talking about Whiplash.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
You had some early exposure to this through TIFF?
Yes, I was very lucky to see this movie at TIFF, and
very lucky. Spoiler alert.
Well, the rest of that sentence is going to be my very positive review of this film, which okay. I think is.
So I'm glad I got that spoiler alert in there just in time.
Yeah, you got that killer joke in right in time. Quite frankly, was very excited about the film I had just watched as it wrapped up. I distinctly remember at one point seeing this movie, and during TIFF, I'm doing a lot of running around, and pretty much the only time I sit down is when I'm actually watching the movies, if I'm lucky enough to get a seat. I got a seat for this one anyway, but I'm still holding this giant camera because I have to be ready to shoot the Q&A immediately, like once the credits start rolling.
There's another videographer waiting to take your seat if you fuck anything up.
Yeah, exactly. I just sort of like, you never forget you're holding a 10-pound camera. And about 45 minutes into this movie, I was just like, what is this fucking camera doing? And I'm like, oh, I'm working. I just totally got sucked into this movie. I was a big fan.
Going into it, did you have high hopes?
No.
Or?
No.
Okay.
I figured just because the way it had been reviewed, I sort of saw it and as the, I don't know, Jason Reitman produced this movie, but I didn't even know that going in, but I sort of assumed it would be one of those like little indie movie that could sort of thing. That's just nice and charming, but, and enjoyable, but nothing I really want to think about all that much after I leave. But, Whiplash struck a chord, I suppose.
Ooh, funny. I only saw it, recently in the last few days. So
Adam Sandler was in my screening, by the way. You might get a kick out of it. I was sitting down the row from Adam Sandler and all of the rest of his Happy Madison crew, all those Grandma's Boy dudes and all that.
Anyway, that's great. No, I was already aware of this movie and the hype surrounding it. I mean, it's in a lot of theaters now and is getting very, very, very positive reviews from almost everybody. Mm-hmm. So I was, you know, you go in with high expectations, so I didn't know how much I was going to like it. And it seemed like a story I kind of, you know, you can kind of guess. It's the student or athlete or actor or whatever who, you know, runs into a tough coach slash teacher slash whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he tests them and then they don't get along. And in the end, their mutual respect for whatever it is they're doing brings them together. And that's great. And so I was wondering how I was really going to like this movie that. Mm-hmm. And really, that is pretty much what this movie is.
As far as the basic plot structure, it does not take any extreme left turns. You know?
Right. But there are some good twists and there are some things that this movie does differently than, you know, the 10,000 movies in that subgenre that I just described.
I 100% agree.
So good. I'm glad, because my question was going to be for you to explain those things. So if you didn't agree, that would be difficult. What is it that this movie does? You know, as I said, it really is that formula. What separates this from so many other things that really try to do the same thing?
Damien Chazelle might be a genius. This movie's so fucking well directed. And I know I've been using, like, my immediate reaction involved a lot of hyperbole as I recounted, but I had the same feeling when this movie ended, as like I felt like I hadn't seen like a filmmaker their like a first film that really made me. And I know this isn't Damien Chazelle's first film, but it's my first exposure to his work. It reminded me of seeing Brick for the first time, where it's like, oh, this movie isn't perfect, but man, I cannot wait to see what this guy does. You know,
there's still a career in here.
Yeah, exactly. That's what Chazelle does. It's I feel like this movie is like a David Fincher super fan makes Inside Llewyn Davis. and that's really kind of the feel of the movie. And I like both elements of that equation. And there's a lot of really fast cutting in this movie, in scenes where you wouldn't think that things should be cut this fast, and it still somehow works. Particularly just in the intro, where he's just walking around, New York, and he's going to the movie theater with Papa Reiser. It's just a very quick cut movie, a lot of gorgeous extreme close-ups, a lot of percussive editing, and the use of sound is amazing, and just focus on the tiny details, that's really, really amazing. Specifically, I think the first time where you really, really notice that is when he first graduates to whatever the main band is, Fletcher's band.
Core.
No, not even that. When he's the squeaker, it's his first day.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
He gets there at 6:33 for 9 a.m. Start time. As soon as the other students start coming in at like 5 to 9, the sounds and the focus on the reeds and the pages, all of these little things, it's so, so stylistic and so wonderful. And I think it's just sort of that vision that keeps this movie apart from other things of its ilk, you know?
Yeah, and it's
certainly a big part of it.
Yeah, and obviously this character has a, you know, a very focused life at this point. You know, he doesn't do much else. He finds a girl who, you know, is nice and they seem to get along, but, you know, he just doesn't have any time for that. You know, he's living a very focused life on this drumming thing, on this jazz band. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's his world. And those things we were describing of all the close-ups and all just these really small sounds that we wouldn't hear, but like make up his whole existence of just pages flipping and reeds getting wet and spit valves opening and things like that. Like, mm-hmm. That is his life. That is his world. And so, I loved all those close-ups and the really, you know, making these small little sounds so big and really just, it is his entire world. Like, he's just so focused on this one thing. And I really like that.
Yeah, and you can't be good in this world unless you don't see things a little bit differently from the average person. And I think those elements, those parts of the movie give you a really good example of seeing things a bit differently, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I liked obviously J.K. Simmons. Like, I love him comedically and dramatically. I was happy to see that he was given, you know, it's not the lead role.
Yeah.
Like Simmons, it's very big.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was happy just to see him get a role this big. And then watching it was just such a pleasure because he's such a terrible asshole and so like charismatic and compelling at the same time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's not like anybody, there are no J.K. Simmons haters out there, but
no.
They're just, yeah. Sorry.
Degrees of how much people like him.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, he's absolutely incredible in this movie. And it's a role that lends itself to showiness, and a lot of actors could knock out of the park, but he definitely does. And he's the guy actually playing Fletcher, and it's wonderful. He's so good in this movie.
Oh, it's a role where you just get to chew up the scenery. But yeah, it's tons of fun watching him do it.
Yeah. And he gets to in an interview I read with him a couple months ago, he talked about how he hadn't really gone full asshole since he was on Oz. And he was like, you can tell he kind of gets a bit of a kick out of it every once in a while with some of the lines that he is able to say in this world. And one that I really enjoyed is, and this is a story they told after I saw it at TIFF, the J.K. Simmons, you remember the line where he says, if you don't get this or whatever, I will fuck you like a pig.
Yeah.
J.K. Simmons does not like that line. He improv that when they were shooting the short. We should say that this movie started off as a short and then turned into a feature length. But he didn't like that. He improvised it on the short. And he was made sure that Damien Chazelle couldn't use it. Or like he fucked up the visuals of the take or whatever. And they just used the audio of it in Whiplash. And Damien Chazelle's like, I like that line too much. I'm sorry, J.K. has to make it. And yeah, there are some things that J.K. Simmons says that he's not even okay with the second he realizes what just came out of his mouth. And that's how intense Fletcher is, you know?
Right. Let's talk more about Fletcher, though.
I got time.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I just called him a terrible asshole. Is that...
He's great at being an asshole, actually. He's a terrible person.
Right. So that's accurate. Is there any kind of saving grace for him? Is there any more to him for you?
There is, like, very briefly. But then you realize it was all a setup.
Well, there's just a couple, there's a few moments.
Oh,
there's,
yes. Because he, like, high-fives that kid early on. That's sort of right. The first humanistic moment. And then when his student Sean, I think his name was, dies.
Right? Yeah, exactly. He shows a lot of remorse over Sean Casey's death. And, I mean, it doesn't take much to be polite to one of your former students and their adorable little child. So it's not like he is not necessarily a great person for that. But... Mm-hmm. Are we supposed to see him as, like, are those scenes function to let us see him as something more? Because really, as a teacher, he's pretty cold, and to say the least. And then we have those kind of moments which seem to, is it to sketch him out a bit more three-dimensionally, or what's the purpose of those little bits?
Yeah, it's supposed to drive home the fact that, yes, he is a person, and he has this worldview that... in certain instances, there is a very strong value in being mean. And 88% of the time in this movie, we see Fletcher in the world where he sees value in being mean, you know? Like you said, there are only really brief moments where we see him as a human. And yes, I think he is... they don't want us to see him like this character that is this terrifying force of nature and nothing else. They do want us to think that, yeah, this is a person that could exist, you know. This is just a person with a certain mentality, you know. He's still a human, but he believes that throwing a chair at somebody can get positive results, you know.
Right, he would just be kind of too cartoony otherwise, right?
Yeah, exactly.
If there's nothing to him,
yeah, it would certainly make it trickier. Like, it's not like that's never been done well, but yeah, it would make it more difficult, and it would make it way more difficult to like Andrew at the end, I think. Yeah,
right. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so do you believe that it's Fletcher's goal to really their career because he got him fired from Schaefer Academy with that final show, or is it
to destroy his career?
To destroy Andrew's, you know, any career of drumming.
Yes, I think absolutely. I don't think that is a teaching tool. That is an I want to destroy you tool.
Okay, and it's not the metaphorical symbol being thrown at your head. It's complete sabotage with no hope of anything good coming of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I do not think that that is meant to be teaching. I think everything up until then is meant to be to help him grow. I think
once he's got him fired there, he puts him out of that category.
Exactly. And then it just sort of, I don't know, there's a really nice flow of their relationship within that scene that's really great. Like, I mean, because over the course of 8 minutes or however long that sequence is, Andrew goes from being invited to be this drummer to being told that it's a setup and that he doesn't have the music. And
not being told in that way, though, like just being put in front of everyone and then... completely sabotaged.
I've seen this movie 3 times now and people gasp that line. Like I've heard literal gasps in each screening of this film, and it's such a great moment. And
it really is, because there's a couple of very good twists in this movie, and that's one of the answers I had, like, for what separates this. There are some very cool twists, and that sabotage is absolutely one of them. There's gasps in my theater too, and it's such an emotional reaction. Like, you just can't even control yourself at that point.
There does seem to be a lot of, like, strong emotional reaction to this movie in general. The first time I saw it was TIFF and everybody applauded, and that's normal, especially when the talent and the director are around. The second screening I saw, which was just, like, a Friday afternoon, everybody applauded. And today, like, somebody applauded during the dinner scene. Like, he was, and I was just like, these are things that just don't happen. And also, there was an old woman walking around the theater looking for something for, like, 20 minutes of the movie, which is really weird. And people asked her what she was looking for. It doesn't matter, but it is very bizarre. Anyway, Whiplash makes weird things happen. It's basically the moral story.
I guess so.
But yes, going back to the twist, yeah, this movie really does want to entertain. And I think but one of the key things about this movie is that it's always a little meaner than you anticipate. And that's kind of the twist that keeps happening. And, and again, is what I think, really separates this movie. And, as somebody that, you know, I'm not Fletcher, but as somebody that understands Fletcher, you know, Fletcher's ideas, a little bit more than the average person, I enjoy that. Again, it's like David Fincher made Inside Llewyn Davis. There's a lot of these voicey moments of people saying, basically, I'm better than you, you know, and I like that stuff. You know, I find it very interesting, and I feel it's very reflective of modernity.
Okay. In that the last sequence there, I mean, I like this whole movie. I do think that this movie has helped so much by having such a good closing sequence. Like, I think it's honestly gets a 2-point jump on a rating out of 10 by just having such a great closing. Like, just because we've heard music throughout the movie, but this is kind of our most extended one. It's cool music that I don't think people are exposed to a ton. An insane solo, which is very, very entertaining. And then we get kind of the emotional thing. We get his dad watching him. We get
The last shot of Paul Reiser in this movie is awesome.
We'll talk about that. All Paul Reiser will be analyzed. obviously the you know, probably the central part of this movie, I guess, is Andrew's drumming, but really that goes hand in hand with his, we kind of have all these things.
Sorry, with his what? You cut out.
Oh, with his relationship with Fletcher.
Yes, of course.
And, you know, we have all these things culminating in a really big scene, tons of fun visual stuff, all a pretty, you know, self-contained scene on the stage there, pretty much. Do you agree that this movie's finale really is probably what I think makes it a big jump in quality in people's mind.
I think it it yes. Although the one thing that I've talked about, the one dissenting voice I've heard about this movie, like she enjoyed this movie except the finale that wouldn't end, she said. And that's the only negative thing a friend of mine has said to me about this film. But it certainly, it helps like send you out of the theater being like, holy shit, that was amazing. And especially since it's such an interesting, the fact that there's not a lot of movement going on outside of, you know, the people that are sitting down and playing their instruments. But it's still such a lively, exciting sequence. And when the cymbal falls over, people love when Fletcher picks it up for Neiman. It's a great moment. It does that whole, you know, learn from Nolan, always cut to black thing on like a really strong note. And yes, it does send people out of the movie theater pretty riled up, you know, just because it's this really exciting sequence, and it does save its best stylistic moves for last, right? But I think this movie has a lot of fun stuff to think about in the sequences that precede that. For what we discussed with seeing the details a little bit differently and how important that is, the value of being mean, the idea of inherent talent isn't really talked about in this movie, but the idea of somebody seeing something that they want to become and seeing the things that they have to go through to get to that. I think these are all things that I really enjoy thinking about. The father figures in this movie that we haven't really addressed. And I think every scene with Nicole, Andrew's sometime girlfriend, is fascinating. I think that's another way the movie kind of takes a bit of a left turn from these types of stories.
Yeah, definitely. It's they fight over how passionate he is, and then in the end, formulaically, they would fight over it, and then in the end, they just magically are okay with each other's life goals, and things just work out.
Yeah,
which is absolutely not what happens.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Like there's a discussion about that eventually happening in this movie, you know, like this is a thing that will definitely occur, yeah. You know, and that's why we should break up beforehand. Whereas like, again, the first time I saw this movie, I was like, oh, he's going to be practicing so hard. He's going to miss their date at 7 p.m. on Monday or whatever, or later that this will happen, because that's what would happen in this movie if this movie wasn't inventive. But yeah, he knows that at one point it's going to stop him, and so he decides to stop it, I suppose, the relationship. But even outside of that, I think you get really amazing rom-com moments in between. Like, they only have two scenes where they're actually, like, flirting with each other. I think the scene where he asks her out is really good. I think it's really funny, and the way she fucks with him is really funny. And his reaction,
it's so mean.
His reaction to it is so natural. And it's really great and then on their actual first date, you can actually see the moment where she decides she can trust him. It's right before she talks about how she doesn't like, pardon?
She's homesick?
A little bit, and right before she talks about hating Fordham, basically. And then they end up talking about how her mom's a bit crazy and stuff. And you can see it, and I think Melissa Benoist is really great in this movie in a role that has very little details. But I don't know, there's just this moment that you don't really see in these movies. It's this moment that's always implied and really hard to get across, and it's just a wide shot of two people sitting down, eating pizza and talking. And you can see her decide, I'm going to trust this person. And that's awesome. And the fact that it happens in a movie that's surrounded with probably like eight better things than that, I think is really amazing.
Yeah, no, it is this very, very cool subplot that I think is not on screen very often. and whenever
it would
be
so easy to hate, you know, like,
oh yeah.
Because it could have been wrote so easily, you know?
Well, yeah. And, you know, as I've kind of, I mentioned, like, this is a formula we see a very often. The romantic subplot's usually the worst part of those movies.
Yeah.
Because you know everything that's going to happen. They don't really focus on it well enough to even get three genuine moments where this movie has, you know, that in what's probably like 7 minutes of screen time, as you said.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely underused. but I think that's very much the point of this, right? Mm-hmm. It's all the other things in his life that he is willing to sacrifice in order for this one thing that he's so very focused on. And yeah, like you definitely see some chemistry, and they get along very well always. And it's something that he just sacrifices for this other thing. And it's cool that they do have that chemistry, and it is so well done. And then just something that's shoved off to the side.
Yeah, exactly. And I know I'm harping on this, but again, she's really great. And she kind of reminded me a bit of Sloane in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, where it's just sort of like she's this embodiment of some, like, I don't know, this is just very likable person who just looks like an inherently hopeful human being. And somebody that in 7 minutes you would decide, maybe I could quit everything I'm doing to be with this person. And and I think that the movie gets that across, and it makes him breaking up with her in a very mean way, but in a way that he views as sort of normal for his situation. It makes it way more intense, I suppose, you know? And yeah, basically everything in this movie involving Nicole is very good.
Yes,
including, as with most other things in this movie.
Including questions of, where do you want to go? Pizza! That part made me really happy for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just their discussion about her missing home and being very upfront about her not really knowing what she wants to do and not loving love.
Yeah.
A few small moments that are just really, really genuine, and I thought just rang true emotionally, and then are, you know, swept to the side for what is the goal of this movie, which thematically is exactly what these kinds of people do. So yeah, it seemed very appropriate. Mm-hmm. You mentioned father figures and the Rise Man himself.
Yeah. He's back.
So Andrew's mom ran away when he was young, and Paul Reiser's his dad and the only parent we see for the movie. Mm-hmm. Even that is kind of a curveball already. It's usually the father that's gone, and then we have the coach or teacher or whatever being that father figure.
Yeah.
Terrence is very much a father figure, even, I think, described using those very words at one point. What do you make of the mother being gone and kind of Paul Reiser's role in this whole thing?
It's sort of a Reiser versus Simmons sort of thing where... Because, I mean, Paul Reiser is portrayed in this movie as exactly the father you want to have. You know, he's very kind and loving, and he seems to have a very good relationship with his son.
Very forgiving.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, we never see him yell, which is a direct contrast to Fletcher. You know? even when Andrew's kind of, like, I think the most upset Paul Reiser ever gets at is... his son in this movie is probably during the dinner table scene. And even then it's very like, Andrew, I mean, let's think about what we're saying here.
Yeah.
Whereas Fletcher, who knows what he would do, throw a lamb chop or something.
And use words I don't even want to say on this podcast where he can say anything we want.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's meant to be shown as this sort of, Neiman grows up in this loving and encouraging place. But he still decides to join this world of rage, you know? And yeah. that's why I know I mentioned this earlier, but the last shot of Paul Reiser in this movie is in the second half of this finale that we've talked about, where Neiman has walked off stage into the loving arms of his father, and then's like, no, I'm not letting Fletcher win, and turns around, goes back to the drum kit. And then goes on the solo. The last shot we see of Paul Reiser is Paul Reiser watching this this solo through a closing doorway. Like the door isn't closing in the shot, but it's like he's peeking through something, and it's kind of just very much about Andrew leaving his father behind for Fletcher. And I think that's great. Like, I think it's a great moment. It's probably a problematic decision for his happiness in the long run, Andrew's, or his normal human happiness in the long run. But yeah. I think it's a really, really great moment. Yeah.
Yeah. In those shots, in any movie always remind me of The Godfather, the ending of the first Godfather, when Kay, is that her name?
Yes.
Kay's being, you know, left out of the business, left out of this discussion, kind of left out of her husband's life in any meaningful way from now on.
Yeah, exactly. This world is not for her, is basically the idea of that shot.
Yeah, and that's it's used very effectively in this movie. It's kind of, you know, even without the Godfather, I think that the point of the shot still gets across. You know, you're clearly being closed out of this world and you're looking in on something that you're no longer going to interact with the way you used to.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, we've talked about The Master on this podcast. That's a movie that does those shots like every 10 minutes. So,
yeah.
And so it's not an uncommon idea, but it's always nice when you can do it well, you know, and this movie absolutely does it well.
Yeah, and with The Godfather, I don't know. For me, it's always just this kind of little shorthand of all the things that are summed up in that final scene, too.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's him, you know, looking in from the outside and him, really being separated from his son. And in this way,
he's physically in a different room, you know?
Yeah.
Like he's outside of where this is happening.
And he's watching his son have this very romantic or sexual way, but this intimate moment with another father, like they're so in tune with each other. You can tell there's such an amount of like pride, and they're both just very much on the same page. And we don't see Andrew on the same page with his father ever. Andrew eats around the raisinettes. Like he only takes what he wants. Like he's not just
he just had a cavity filled.
Sure. No, but he's just not going to.
Which his dad paid for because his dad is kind of responsible.
It's so supportive. Yeah. No, he's just, you know, very much left out of this world. And his son saying, like, I don't think I'm supposed to be part of this family. Like, mm-hmm. it's not harsh. He doesn't feel like his dad has been, you know, abusive or intentionally unsupportive of him. It's just he's been so supportive, and that's not the way that the world that Andrew wants to live in works. Mm-hmm. And summed up very clearly at the dinner table scene where you know, his brother is that his brother? Is that supposed to be his brother? The
football player? I think it's Paul Reiser's brother. I don't think Andrew's cousins with those guys, right?
Okay, yeah. Okay. I wasn't sure, but I didn't think it really
doesn't matter. They're not going to make the NFL. We don't need to remember them.
Oh man, how was come play with us? Four words the NFL's never going to say to you as a line. I loved that.
That was the line the guy applauded for and then said brilliant writing out loud.
No, that was good, but I mean, we see in that dinner scene it's like, "Oh, well, this guy's quarterback, like he must be great, let's all idolize him." And then Andrew says, you know, it's division three, like it doesn't mean anything. Like, I'm the best drummer at the best school in the country. That's effectively the NFL, but it's just not they're just not living in the same world, and that's not what's important to the people who populate his normal life, his family and his family friends and things like that.
He got a 93 yard touchdown, but he got a 93 yard division three touchdown.
Yeah. So what's that really mean?
I think that dinner table scene's so interesting. And we talked about Birdman a few weeks ago, and I feel like in 5 minutes, this movie gets across so many of like the big key things that exist in Birdman, and does it all in 5 minutes in Whiplash. And I think that's great, and it's such an entertaining scene.
It's great. I love that scene. And then the mother kind of says, you know, let's move on and talk about something more pleasant, and that doesn't work. Do you want to discuss the role of women? It's a point I've seen criticized about this movie. Females in this, the world of Whiplash, are basically distractions and moms being distractions.
Yes.
There's one trombone player who's a female.
Who gets basically gets chirped precisely for being a female. And that's kind of the only moment she has in the movie. And we talked about that adorable daughter. Even she is a girl that is immediately cast aside. Basically, she's just like, "Oh yeah, high five this kid. All right, I'm going to where the real shit happens now." I guess I haven't thought about it that much because I don't know. I feel like this movie, again, by, even though Nicole is not treated very well in this film, just the fact that somehow she's able to seem like a real character in 7 minutes, I think that buys a lot of goodwill for me. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Because yes, these are all things that I would say were problematic if I was really looking for them. But I think the movie does so much so well, and certainly does an element involving a female character very well, that I think gets a bit of a pass. Yeah.
Yeah, and we discussed why thematically Nicole's minimal screen time and abrupt and very rude departure from.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not that
on point.
It's not that she's holding him down. It's that he knows he will. Although I guess it's just kind of the same thing with different words.
and just more time.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I just don't have a huge problem with it. But yes, you are correct that there is a there are not a lot of strong female characters in Whiplash.
But there is a Johnny Utah joke. So
yeah, so that's what that's why.
You're welcome, ladies.
Yeah.
my brother who listens to this podcast has recently saw Point Break and has been texting me lines and ideas about it for like 2 weeks now. So I thought I'd have 106 minutes free of Johnny Utah jokes when I wanted
you
to see
Whiplash. Absolutely did not, sir.
No, I did not.
You got one and then a very quick callback.
But it was perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. sorry.
No?
What do you make of Andrew's question to Fletcher about whether or not there's a line? You know, there's... Which I think is something, like, I think that exact phrase, I think, was in a lot of people's heads while watching that discussion. At least it was in mine, because we kind of see Terrence Fletcher saying, you know, people, when you coddle people, when good enough is good enough, we never achieve our full...
Never achieve, and sorry, cut out.
We never achieve our full potential, and, you know, Charlie Parker wouldn't be Charlie Parker unless someone threw a symbol at his head. But then we have, you know, physical abuse and homophobic slurs and some other things that maybe aren't worth it. What do you make of that line and kind of that whole discussion about, you know, might you be discouraging the next Charlie Parker, and his response that, you know, the next Charlie Parker could not be discouraged?
I don't know, because this scene is weird to me, because there are a lot of things that Fletcher says in that scene where they're talking in a bar where I pretty much agree with Fletcher.
I know.
And that's, well, and I think
you're kind of meant to for a lot of it.
Yeah, but like, it's weird. And we talked about this with Nightcrawler again, where, and There Will Be Blood as well, where a character kind of says, no, I understand human emotions. I just don't necessarily have them. and there's a lot of that in Fletcher, for the most part. And again, you know, you do get these little glimpses, but, and that's what keeps him from becoming a Nightcrawler style character, you know, are these little moments. But there is a lot of stuff in that scene that I wholeheartedly agree with, specifically the good job line. Like, I feel like most people could deal with hearing good job less frequently, you know? And yeah. I don't mean that, I don't think that somebody that has the internal capacity to become Charlie Parker would hear good job and be like, oh, I guess I'm done practicing, you know, because
because all those people did hear good job a lot. And
yeah, exactly.
Good job in the form of record sales and money and people going to their show. And...
Yeah. And I think there does need to be sort of this this barrier inside yourself that is like, that hears compliments and is like, no, you're wrong. Did you not see, I don't know, didn't you see me dragging at the 34 second mark? You know, that was garbage. and I think there is sort of this agreement you have to have with yourself that in order to be really good, you have to be able to see the moments where you are terrible, or to exaggerate the moments where you're not perfect so that you think you're terrible in those moments. You know, I think the important thing about that is that somebody hearing good job too much too early in their life will then start to accept it throughout. Whereas if you get somebody like Fletcher that beats it in your head that you need to ignore these compliments, that's sort of what he's talking about, I think, you know, and that's what he's trying to do with Neiman, right? He's trying to build that interior wall or that inner wall for Neiman so that
right.
Neiman can't let Paul Reiser tell him he did great.
And right. Then, yeah. Okay. So, but what you said something there about there are those little moments that stop him from becoming a Nightcrawler character, mm-hmm.
But he's still 90% of the way there.
Yeah. I was going to say, what is the separation from him at the end of this movie, kind of rejecting his biological father and kind of embracing this other world of, you know, rage and physical abuse and emotional abuse to become the best. How is that not Nightcrawler? How is that not Daniel Plainview from There Will Be Blood? What
I think
I don't see. It's a more like that's what I mean about this ending. I think it's a much more entertaining. It's such a spectacle with the cool visual cutting to the music and all these close ups and these alternating shots, which are, you know, really cool. And as you said, like he directs the hell out of this movie, Chazelle. Mm-hmm. But I think it's because it's so fun, it's so cool. It does take away that this is, or actually, does it not clarify the fact that this isn't just Daniel Plainview beating his kid with a bowling pin, but way less gross? Not his kid, sorry, his
surrogate kid,
rival after sending away his kid. Yeah. Well, it's just more poppy and fun, but it's
yeah, but
the
I,
same idea, no?
Yeah, but I think in a way, I don't, because yes, I agree that a lot more people than I think should view this as a sort of a triumphant ending. And it is triumphant in one sense that I feel like we're supposed to see that Fletcher has accepted Neiman and that Neiman is a good drummer now. You know, like he's very good.
Yep.
But that's what he, it all depends on how you feel about him leaving behind his father, his biological father
and a girl that he probably
exactly he's leaving behind these very normal human things, and what he's getting is the approval of this madman. And I think what we're supposed to see is a triumphant
become one of the greats or be closer,
yeah, and what we're supposed to see is Andrew being triumphant, but in a way like in a way that might not be necessarily good for the average human, you know? And I don't think, you know, I think Andrew's kind of giving up a happy, normal life at the end of this movie. I think that's what the ending is supposed to be. It's him joining Fletcher's ranks. And that's, to the average person, is not good, you know? It's exactly what Neiman wants. He might decide eventually that it's not absolutely not what he wants. But he probably won't. And he's just becoming this incredibly dedicated person. And I don't think it's necessarily like a positive human message at the end of the movie, but I certainly think it's different from There Will Be Blood, you know?
Yeah, I guess it's
and Nightcrawler, you know?
Yeah, because, I guess
In Nightcrawler and There Will Be Blood, they're kind of just, they are inhuman through the whole movie, whereas Neiman sort of decides, he's like, he picks away at these human elements and then just sort of decides, you know what, I'm going full Fletcher, you know, I'm here, I'm in this world.
I feel like that's more tragic. I feel like these are people who are misanthropic and kind of lost causes from the beginning, and like Neiman actually was kind of a decent person and had that stripped from him, and we've lost one of the good ones.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's something that's very interesting about this film, and the idea of wanting to be great at something, and the fact that you have to give up your humanity to do it, you know. And I think that's what's so fascinating about Whiplash. And you mentioned the question: is there a line? There absolutely is a line. Like there's sort of a moment where you could decide: am I going to dedicate myself entirely to this, or am I maybe just going to be a jazz drummer that plays Wednesday nights, you know, after I sell insurance or whatever, can you be happy with that, you know? And if the answer is no, then this is what you have to do. You gotta be Andrew Neiman, you know. And I think there is, in somebody that really seriously wants to pursue something like that, there always has to be that moment where you realize exactly what it's actually going to take, and then decide whether or not you're up to it, you know. And then even then you still might fail, you know?
Yeah. And we get some of that early on when he's speaking with Nicole about, I think it's, yeah, it's in a conversation to Cole, and there's a couple other spots, but when he's talking about, you know, what it is going to take and how he wants to be one of the greats, and saying, you know, I'd rather die. Oh, this is, I guess, at dinner, but I'd rather die at 34 full of heroin or whatever, yeah, than, you know, and have and be remembered than, you know, die 90 and happy and never have done anything. And, mm-hmm, you know, the second I die, people will forget me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought that would be the stuff that really, you know,
that really what?
That really stuck with you, the legacy stuff and the memory and the sacrifice to do something outside, like, that will outlive you.
Okay, yeah. And yes, that's kind of what I'm talking about, you know, and he is getting rid of his humanity to be able to do this. There's, I mean, we've referenced it in passing already, there, that Charlie Parker symbol story that's told a handful of times throughout the film. That story doesn't seem to be true.
No, it's not.
Yeah, and I think that's a really interesting element, and I've seen this movie being criticized for that, which I think is insane, for the story not being true but being treated as true. Fletcher and Neiman are two people that both see Charlie Parker as this, like, mythical creature, this mythical jazz creature, you know, and that's exactly what Fletcher wants to become. And of course they change, like, the story changes in their head to become this more dramatic, amazing thing that's crazy.
That requires you to be crazy.
Exactly, because they are remembering this person. They're remembering Charlie Parker. They're remembering his myth. And that's exactly what Neiman wants to be. He wants to become a myth. He wants to be remembered. He wants to be talked about at dinner parties. And that's why I think Fletcher and Neiman throughout the movie blow up the story to be bigger than it actually is, because it helps make Charlie Parker into a myth. We could research him and we could find the facts and find out that maybe these aren't true. Or we can, you know, talk about our idols the way people actually talk about our idols, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, your Larry Bird hit 50 straight half-court shots or whatever, you know? No, he didn't. Stop lying. Yeah.
But do that.
Pardon?
Like, that's, well, like, the Larry Legend did do that, though, you know?
No,
like,
that's the thing. He hit full court shots, and people just don't give him the proper credit. They just assume it's not possible to hit 50 straight full court. Anyway. But you understand, like, what I'm saying about the myth-making thing.
Yeah, it's like, the quote is, you know, don't let facts get in the way of a good story, but it's, in this case, it's, they want to be mythical too. Like, they want bullshit stories to be told about them that seem true because they've become so larger than life by, yeah, being so good at what they do and so like single-mindedly focused on this goal that, like, they want to be so good that stories about them being insane sounds reasonable because you must be insane to be as good as these guys were at jazz drumming.
That's exactly the point I was trying to get across. Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Anything else about Whiplash?
This movie's great.
See it
four times.
Listen for the gasps.
It's so much, like, it's been
Nicole's
a while.
Adorable.
Oh god. I feel like I made that incredibly clear throughout this podcast.
There are some great chirping lines to be drawn from this movie. I will demolish you among them.
There's so many good ones. Yeah, I don't know. It's just really fun seeing a movie like this with a lot of people. It gets a lot of reaction out of people, and it's been a long time since I've seen a movie that everybody in the theater seems to be, like, surprised by and really enthused about, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's, I don't know, it's really great. Yeah.
Yeah. And I made some comments about how I think the end of this movie, maybe fools people into thinking it was a better movie than it is. I say that only to say that last sequence is incredible. And, like, yeah, no matter, I don't, you know, I'm not nuts about drumming or jazz or anything like that, but that doesn't matter at all. Like, it's so, so engaging that, like, it just leaves you with such an emotional feeling. And I can't think of a closing to a new movie I've seen in a very long time that left the whole theater that way.
yeah, for sure. And I mean, I mentioned the Adam Sandler thing already, but, you know, Adam Sandler doesn't strike me as a very excitable person. And again, they did a Q&A after the movie was ended, and then the audience clears out while I'm packing up my camera. So it's an empty theater. And at TIFF, they, you know, when celebrities come to these movies during the festival, they, like, usher them in and out the back door, of course, because it's Adam Sandler. He can't leave through the lobby. But yeah, and it, just seeing him going up and talking to Miles Teller and being so excited, like it was really weird because it was like, I know Adam Sandler can't act that. He can't pull that off if it's fake. I know it. I've seen enough of his movies. I saw Men, Women, and Children and The Cobbler at the festival. He's not good enough. And yeah, I think this movie is just so engaging and can get a rise out of anybody, including Adam Sandler.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you. Sorry.
Oh, can I do my plugs?
Of course. Yeah.
If I don't know who listens to this, I don't think a lot of people. I think we established that.
No, this is going to be the podcast that breaks us through.
Yeah, but anyone who lives in or around Newmarket, York region, I am starting a improv comedy workshop for free. So feel free to search Improv Newmarket on Craigslist or email me improvnewmarket@gmail.com. That's a real plug.
Yeah, that is a real plug. And
I mean, your plug was real too, but for
well,
me,
I mean, or if the MacGuffin Men one is easier to remember, just tweet the MacGuffin Men and we'll get you in contact with the Newmarket Improv gang.
Yeah.
Sorry, I already forgot the name. I'm sorry.
That's all it is.
Okay. But yeah, thank you for listening to the MacGuffin Men. I don't know what we're talking about next week. Maybe top five. That seems like something we should talk about, right?
Yeah. Or do you want to do a Mike Nichols movie? We'll talk about this.
No, this is what the people don't pay for. They don't pay for this.
Yeah. Poorly plugging our next podcast.
All right. Yeah.
Nextpodcast@gmail.com.
Probably an actual email address, but we do not have the password. So send whatever you want to them. Yeah. Thank you for listening, especially if you've made it through this much. All right. Later.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.